Go Loud. Talking Bollocks, a Go Loud original podcast. Sponsored by Right Style Furniture. Right price, right style, right now. Visit rightstyle.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Are you still sitting on a beanbag and you're sitting in them like you're 17?
Grow up and head to Right Style Furniture. They've got proper, comfy, stylish gear and they're Irish and family run too.
The house packages are class. For just €3,649, you get an electric sofa set, full dining setup, and beds with mattresses. That's a serious bang for your buck.
Oh, you got me corner sofa of them, and I haven't stood up since.
They've got locations in Font Hill, Belgard, and now Omni Park, open every day and late on a Thursday and Friday in Font Hill and Omni.
One stop shop for kitting out the gaff. Don't say we never looked after you.
Exactly. Right price, right style, right now.
Visit www.rightstyle.ie. And when you shop in store, tell them Terrence and Calvin sent you, and they'll throw a discount on top of that as well. So get down to Roy Soil Furniture today.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in the door. Fill your body up. Walk it hard and low. When you finish that.
The hip knocker. Episode 271 of Talking Bollocks, brought to you by Go Loud. It's me, Terry Flower.
It's me, COB.
And this week we're joined by
Aidan Walsh.
Aidan, what's the crack, pal? How are you?
I'm all good. Thank you very much for having me, lads.
Thanks for coming on. Jesus Christ, it's a long time coming. I was saying to you when you come in, I said, you're a hard man to get a hold of.
Oh. No, just busy. It's always the way, as I say before, like nothing happens for a long period of time and then everything just happens at once. So thanks very much, honestly, just for having me on. I always watch you, so it's a pleasure to be on. And
lovely.
It's a legend. Yeah. Nice one, pal. No, that's what I was saying. You send Aidan a message and 3 weeks later he gets back to you.
I know. Lads,
what's up, lads? You're still around?
Yeah. We're getting you free on Tuesday and then you write back to you 3 weeks later. It'll be a Saturday. You'll be like,
Aidan, you are two-time Olympian and you won a bronze medal at the Olympics.
Yeah.
You got injured celebrating.
Yeah.
I need to bring this up. Yeah. What the fuck happened to you?
I know. So I see, before going in to fight for a medal, I always seen the likes of Michael Conlon, even like Paddy Barnes, Michael Carruth, like all the Olympians before, like when they won the medal. I actually think the night before I was watching Michael Conlon win his medal and like jumping up, and I was like, if I win a medal tomorrow here, I'm definitely going to do that. And then whenever the score got announced, it felt like it was about 2 hours. You know, like when we were waiting on the winner, it felt forever. But like looking back now, it was like a few seconds. But whatever way they say it, split decision. And then it felt like ages. Why I thought I lost. All these mad things just be going through your head. And whenever they said the red corner, I just jumped. Like it was like, whoom. And whenever way I jumped, I didn't realize I jumped that high. And whenever when I came back down, I broke both ankles.
Both?
Yeah. Serious, isn't it?
And we shouldn't laugh.
No, I know, but, no, but when you look back and hey, it is like, but you go to yourself like it was, yeah, just whatever way.
Both ankles.
Yeah. Whenever I came back down.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That is madness.
Yeah.
Do you ever think that you were in the wrong sport then, if you could jump that high?
I know. I didn't even realize. It must have been just the adrenaline or whatever way. I don't know.
It's normal. If I was to stand in the middle of this room now and jump, I'd be thinking about landing.
Yeah.
That's obviously adrenaline. You weren't thinking.
No, I wasn't. Whenever they said red, I was like, vroom, just jumped up in whatever way. It was crazy.
And what did that mean by you then, that injury? You obviously couldn't fight again.
I couldn't fight on, but I'd secured a medal, which was obviously not, it wasn't ideal, but I'd secured the medal, which was a bonus.
Yeah.
And then that was it. Like, and then it just, obviously we went home, COVID and stuff was on, then we went home then after that. And and then have to just recover and stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
It's crazy, like.
It's a mad story.
Mad, like. It's
Jesus
crazy.
Christ. Your sister was a boxer as well.
Yeah, she was in the same Olympics as well. She's going for her third Olympics in LA, 2028 here. She's been a massive part of my career. Like, she's been somebody, like, probably all the things that made me successful, I learnt and stole from her, like. So, yeah, she's been a massive part. She loves it. She'll continue to drive on, like.
Yeah. Who was the better boxer out of the two?
Her, no, definitely.
Really?
Oh, definitely. Like, yeah.
She that good, yeah.
I always say, like, all the girls in the Irish team, the women's Irish team at the minute, are like really successful.
Yeah.
And they're actually leading the way, which is great to see as well, because you see them day in, day out, putting the work in. But Michaela, yeah, definitely. Like, I always feel like I got lucky in the Olympics, where like Michaela, most definitely, like if I was to give my medal away, she deserves the medal far more than what I did. I always feel like I was lucky, I was fortunate. I got there and I knew a bit of luck on my side, happy days. But internationally, like, she's won more medals than I've ever, like, she's on her, I think she holds the record for 14 Irish League titles, the most ever in Ireland. and that's elite titles. I've won elite title, and she's 14.
Yeah, that's madness.
It's crazy.
That is, man. It's class as well.
Yeah.
What was it like for you then, like you and your sister competing at the highest level?
See, to be honest, like, I never really appreciated it until, like, now, you know, when you look back.
And, back,
like, even a few weeks ago, like, I put a clip on Instagram of me boxing. I never watched myself boxing back at all. And it's only now, looking back, and loads of photos, I'm looking and going, we did that together. Do you know? And even people would say, like, Jesus, it's so hard to qualify. It's so hard to even make it to the Olympics. It's so hard to even make it on the national team. To do that consistently, on a consistent basis with your sister, over like 5, 6, 7 years, like I'm only really taking it in now and actually looking at it and going, that was amazing. That was actually really, because I struggled so much throughout my career, you didn't appreciate it and you didn't actually sit back and reflect and go, this is actually amazing what you're doing. Until now you're like, that was actually tough and actually was actually really, really important times in my life.
Yeah. Look, Aiden, you were at the highest level in boxing.
Yeah.
Like I said, you're a two-time Olympian. You won the bronze medal. It's not something that you really... When you're doing talks now, you speak about the psychology side of sports now and mental health and sports and at the highest level, and you retired really young. But I seen something on your Instagram a while ago, and it was you telling a story of a French journalist coming up to you.
Yeah.
Will you tell us that story, please?
Yeah, that was actually a really, like, I actually got quite emotional even going back to my room after that. I was in Hungary. It was my first time working after I retired, and I was with the under-23s in Budapest, Hungary. It was a training gym next to the venue, and some of the lads were sparring, and the French journalist came up to me, and I was standing right next to him, and he was talking away and blah blah, and then he turned around and he says, are you Aidan Walsh? And I was a wee bit surprised. No, I was like, jeez, yeah. And he says, no way, I thought that was you. He says, I've been watching you all week. He says, I've followed you your whole career and I've never seen you once smile. And he said, this week I've watched you all week and I've seen you smiling every single day. And I was like, what? And that, for me at that time, like, I was like a wee bit taken back. And I went back to my room and I was actually sitting thought about it. And I said, do you know what? He's so right. I was away for so many years, under so much pressure, giving up so much. Like most elite athletes, so driven, so determined, so focused, so motivated. And I never enjoyed a single moment of it. Even the Olympic Games, like looking back at photos now and going, you were at the Olympic Games, Aidan. There was people walking past you who are celebrities, Olympic champions, world champion, European champions, the best of the best. Everything was free. But when you know yourself, when you're struggling that much, you want something to be over. You don't appreciate it.
Yeah.
And you don't take it in. You just can't wait till it's over. You can't wait to get home. You can't wait to spend time with your family. And that's the way I was for most of my career. And when he said that to me, I was like, I've 100% made the right decision to step away from sport, because I genuinely was enjoying myself that trip. I had no pressure. I didn't want to go and compete. I didn't want to get in and train. I was just there. I was watching boxing. I was enjoying boxing for a first time in a very, very long time.
It's powerful, isn't it? Someone on the outside being able to see something like that.
Yeah. Mm. And see, even as soon as I stepped away, there was a period where, like, I hadn't really been about boxing fights, or I sort of stayed away and just sort of stayed in the background. Didn't even go near boxing gyms or nothing. And the first time that I went to boxing fights was in Belfast in the Irish Elite Championships. And there's a friend of mine, hadn't seen me in a long time, and he said to me, Aidan, you're literally glowing. You actually look like a normal person again. He says, like, for a lot of your career, and something similar to that French story, you were gaunt looking, you were, you know, lethargic looking, dull, no energy. He says, you actually look, you look fresh. You look like you've been on holiday. I wasn't even on holiday or nothing. He says, you look like you're on holiday. And I said, that's just no pressure, enjoying life, doing what I want to do, spending time with the people I want to spend with. And that was what sport was doing to me. And people say, Aidan, why did you step away from sport at such a young age? Like, you could have went on to another 2 Olympics. But when it's bringing you down that much, and it's not making you happy, you're giving up so much and you're getting very little back. Like, I was winning fights and I was getting out of the ring and I was going, I want to go home. Like, I was at a tournament in Strange and I won 2 fights and I was going to fight for a medal. And I was like, I went home at a breakdown. I was like, just get me out of here. I just want home. People were like, what are you doing? Like, what? You beat an Indian guy who was went on to, the guy actually went on to win a medal at the Worlds right after it. And everybody was like, what are you doing, Aidan? No, you have to stay. I was like, no, I want to go home. And I just can't do it no more. Went home, stepped away from sport. And then obviously when I retired previously before the Olympics. But sport's hard. And I think people don't realise the amount of pressure and anxiety that athletes are under.
Yeah.
Like, everybody in normal, like, mental health rates are massive in Ireland. And when you go to elite sports, the risks increase because of the pressures, the anxieties. Do you know, the demands that is on elite athletes is absolutely crazy. Especially nowadays with social media and phones and, like, everything's public. So you can't get away, you can't hide. You go on your phone and there's articles about you. You go on social media, there's people writing negative things about you. Athletes are under so much pressure. And I think that's the role I do now, like athlete support. It's like, how do you help athletes enjoy sport for what it is and the transition into sport and most importantly, out of sport?
Yeah. Yeah, because that is such a big thing. You see so much when people retire, they don't know what to do with themselves. Because like, you literally, it's like they've essentially died.
Yeah.
Because that life is gone. And it's like, but you're actually in your mid-30s now.
Yeah.
You actually have to still live probably another 50 years.
100%.
What do you do with the rest of your time? Aiden, tell us how you got into sport. So what we usually do, we're all, I guess we go back to the start. Yeah. So if you could tell us where you're from and what life was like for you growing up.
Yeah, so I come from Andytown in West Belfast. Working class area, went to school there, De La Salle. Yeah, just like a normal childhood, but obviously within where I'm from in West Belfast, it was a rough enough area and it was tough enough. The school I went to, like all working class areas, schools, it's tough and you have to be able to defend yourself. My dad, he went to the same school and he sort of knew that, okay, getting into school, like you have to sort of be able to defend yourself. He brought us to the boxing club. But when we went to the boxing club first, there was no female boxers there. So Michaela, she seen that I was going to the boxing club 2 or 3 nights a week and she kept saying, Daddy, can you bring me to the boxing club? He ended up going down and asking the coach, said, listen, is it all right if she jumps in? So she jumped in and started training with us and then she was just blowing all the lads out of the water, no training and stuff. So that's where our journey started together then in St. Agnes's and in Andersonstown Road. And then, yeah, just school was a massive part of my growing up because the boxing club and school taught me straight away that boxing in my life was going to be so important. When I went into school, all the lads in the boxing club went to the same school. So straight away, I was protected. And all the lads were, say I was first year, all the lads were second year, third year, fourth year. So you were going into school, people who were well known in the boxing clubs, well regarded in school. You weren't getting bullied. You weren't getting picked on. And straight away, I was like, this boxing isn't bad. Do you know? And you were making friends. And straight away then, I realised boxing's actually a massive part of my life. And it can actually do so much for me. And that was at 11.
Yeah.
Since then, I was like, right, I have to stick it out.
There's a certain respect for the boxers.
100%.
Yeah.
Massive. Like, I remember the first day we went into the school and there was these big banks, like grass banks, and all the first years, new first years, all the third and fourth years, we were through all the first years down the banks. And when I went in, all my mates and all the people around me were all getting through down, like, no, through down and all. And all the people that were doing it were the people from the boxing club. So I was like the only person there that didn't get through down. So things like that, it was like, you know, you respected and yeah, you were just appreciated because you'd done a bit of boxing. And I thought that was class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you start realising you were good?
Still don't realise I'm good. I'm still waiting.
Yeah.
No, do you know God's honest truth? Like, this is the God's honest truth. A few weeks ago, and I said this earlier, I was watching, just to put a wee clip up on Instagram, I watched back a video of me fighting, I think it was like Commonwealth Games in 2022, and I watched the video back, and that was the first time that I proper watched myself back in my whole life. And I actually said to my mum, I says, geez, I was all right there, wasn't it? It was like, what? Like, I never watched it back, even from a young age, kid, never. And even now, looking back, I was like, do you know what, I actually was all right. I always thought I wasn't that good. As mad as that sounds, I always thought I wasn't that good.
It does sound magic, because I thought you were actually going to have a laugh and a joke there and go, no, still don't realise it.
No. But that's honestly, that's the God's honest truth. See, my whole career, like, confidence was a massive thing for me. That's why I love sports psychology and got into sports psychology, because I started to read, like, self-talk and goal setting and visualisation, started to use the techniques to sort of build me up, you know, into something that I wasn't. I always had to use confident self-talk and body language and, you know, right, okay, prepare myself. And any competition that I ever won in my life, I was using those skills from a young age. Okay, positive self-talk and a bit of belief in you can do it and all that type of stuff. And then after that, my career, any time that I ever really used that, I never performed well because I just went into my shell then and got nervous and, you know,
yeah
it's mad.
Were you ever jealous of people who didn't necessarily feel the pressure so much and were able to take it in the stride?
Yeah, like I know a number of people, like, you know, and even people with just natural talent and they just go in and enter a competition. I'm even to this day, like, I'm still a massive overthinker. Like, you know, you overthink things and what if I lose? And like, it probably done me well in my career because it kept me on my toes and it made me sharp for certain tournaments. But like in the long run, like, know yourself. And that was a real issue that I had when entering high performance, because you were in hotel rooms every single night. So your training was done at, say, 3 or 4 o'clock, and you go back to the hotel room to recover for the next day, and you're in the hotel room, you're thinking, you know, you have all this free time. Well, because when you're young, like, you get up, you go to school, you come home from school, you play with your mates, you're away to the boxing club, you're in bed, the same again. You have no time to think.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, when you're just thrown into that high performance environment, all of a sudden you've got like 4 or 5 hours at night, you're going, and you look around, there's someone lying in the next bed there who you don't even know. and it's like, what's going on here? You don't know if you're going to be selected for the team. You're not getting paid. You don't know if an injury is going to happen, or all these things that come with elite sport. It just was like, boom, just straight away. So yeah, that's where it all sort of came from.
And so you and your sister are both double Olympians. What's going on in your household growing up? Because that isn't normal.
Yeah. Do you know what? Boxing, and again, now looking back, boxing has really helped the relationship with me and my sister. Like, we have a great relationship, and that's based from boxing, because we've been away so much, trained together, lived together, competed together. Like, it's really created a strong bond and a really strong relationship. When we were younger, of course, we were competitive, you know, anything, table tennis, football, there was always that competitiveness, that drive to win. You know, I wanted to win, she wanted to win. And I think that really helped us along the way, because I think in elite sports, you have to be a wee bit competitive. Don't you have to want to sort of improve and do your best. So we were always competitive, but it never got to the point where it was like, you know, overly competitive. It was always just a competitive to do. Like, I wanted to win and she wanted to win. And then there were certain times as well, like, I started to want her to win more than I wanted to win. I used to go to competitions and be like, as long as she wins, I don't care about myself. Just you get the win. And then she was saying the same for me. Just you get the win. And it was sort of like that the whole way through. But as mad as it sounds, like, I grew, it's funny because, like, I find it hard to deal with pressure. I know it's strange, but going through my career, I always had pressure on me, because Michaela was always a few years ahead of me in sports. So she was always winning national titles first, European medals first, world medals first. She qualified a few fights before me for the first Olympics. And so things like that, I was always under pressure, but I actually think that helped me perform, because I was under pressure.
Yeah.
It gave you a wee edge too.
Yeah.
But then over time, then it just burnt me out. It stung me in the long run. Like,
yeah. So what you're getting then from boxing at like 11, 12 years of age, you're getting this respect and kind of protection.
Yeah.
Do you think then you're paying for it mentally? Are you feeling the pressure from that age?
Yeah.
Or does that come on later?
No, from that age as well. Because when you think of it, you're brought in the environment, and I was sort of good at it in a sense. Not just, you know, you sort of had a wee bit of talent and a wee bit of, so automatically, like, you start winning. And sometimes at a young age, when you're winning, you know, then you're on that conveyor belt of like, okay, you have to go to the next ones, or you have to go to the next. And there's always that conveyor belt of you want more, or people expecting you to go on, and oh, you're going to go to the Olympics one day, kid, or which is great at the time. But sometimes when a lot of pressure, for me, again, when pressure's on, it's sort of like, whoa, you know, I want to enjoy my life. And when I was younger, because I got into it at such a young age, I didn't really have much time to go out and play with friends or go to parties, which is a good thing also as well. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But looking back now, I missed out a lot of things that I wish I had of experience. One being education, like, you know, yourself in sport. Like, you're going to school, I'm going to be a boxer, I'm going to go to, I don't need education. And then I'm going to the Olympics and I'm like, right, if I retire hereafter, I have no education. So, you know, there's loads of things you miss out, and there's loads of things that you prioritise over things that you should be prioritising. And I think you have to experience that yourself. Do you know yourself? When someone's telling you need to go to school, or, you know, you're not listening. But when you get to a point, you go, okay, this is important, I need to do it. It makes you want to do it more. And I think that's an important piece.
Yeah. I know you felt the pressure from really young in boxing.
Yeah.
But was there a forced moment for you where you thought, I'm struggling mentally here? And what age would that have been around?
Do you know what? I didn't even realise, because you were so busy when you were young, you didn't ever realise it. You know, like, it was sort of like you were just running about and you know, you never realised it. But I remember, and I vividly remember this, I was going to fight in the All-Ireland final, and I was 12. I got beat the year before, and I was going to the final, and we were driving down the Anderson Town Road, and we stopped at the lights, and I can remember this as clear as day. And I can remember the bank machine's not even there, but I can still remember exactly. And there was a fella, it was about 6 in the morning, and a fella was taking money out of the bank machine. And I said to myself, I would do anything in this world to be that fella standing there taking money out of that bank machine than going to Dublin to compete in the All-Irelands. And I was 12 years of age. I remember that as clear as day. And that was the first time that I ever realised that the pressure is that hard. And you know, it's a massive thing, and I'm big into it now. People say that sport, and boxing particularly, teaches you these skills, like, you know, emotional regulation and managing your temper and all these things, and discipline and all composure. But if you think of it, no one actually sits you down in a boxing club or a sports club and actually teaches you these things. They expect you to do it from 11, 12, 13. You lose your temper in the club, the coach shouts at you, you start crying, or, oh, he's afraid. So you're expected to do all these things. And yet the sport praises you to say, oh, we teach you these things, and the sport teaches you. It doesn't, it expects it from you. And if you're not hardened to it, or you're not adapting to it quick enough, you're termed weak, or, you know, you're not disciplined, or you're soft. Like, I've heard it for years and years and years in clubs, and yet it says, oh, the sport teaches you all these things. The sport expects you to know how to do these things.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're put to the side.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real challenge. And again, it goes for that younger mate, 12 years of age. I was expected to know how to deal with that. You're not taught. You're not shown. You're not saying, right, that's normal, Aidan. I wish back then that I'd have spoke to someone and they say, Aidan, that's normal. That's normal, son. Do you know, but obviously I didn't have the courage then to speak out or share it either, which again, 12. At 12, but who would?
Yeah.
But I just think that there's so many more things that we can do within sports to help younger athletes stay in sport for longer. Mm. And that's what I'm thriving towards now. And that's what I want to achieve, because I know sport's hard enough. And if you have people there to support you, back you, you can go all the way.
Did you ever reach out for help from a psychological perspective growing up?
No, but before the Olympics, someone came to me within Sport Ireland and noticed that I was doing certain things that wasn't really healthy. And they had asked me before the Olympics, did I want to go maybe see a clinical psychologist? And I'd said no, because if I did before the Olympics, I wouldn't have went to the Olympics. Just says I'll open the can of worms that it doesn't really need to be opened, or don't want to open now, because I know I won't go. After the Olympics, the same person asked me again, do you want to get some help? And that's when I met Dr. Paul Gaffney. And to be honest, and I openly say it, it changed my life forever. It really did. And I thank, regardless of the medals and the trophies and the success, I thank boxing more because it gave me the opportunity to meet him than winning any other medals, or honestly. And Paul's been a massive part of my journey since then. Coming back and helping me, supporting me. We're writing the book together. It's going to be out in the next few months, and just doing a lot of good things, because I always thought you had to fight everything in sport. And it's the same when I was younger, it was all fight. Your fate, your thoughts, fate, your drone, eating out in the street, everything was fate, 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 because that's all I knew. And it was only until I met Paul, it was like, there's easier ways in life, there's softer ways, kinder ways, you know, slower ways. And that really helped me. And basically, since 2021, 2022, I've met Paul every week. When I used to go to competitions, I would have met Paul two or three times a week and phoned him before fights, after fights. And that, for me, really helped me. And I think, looking back to that 12-year-old me, that's what I needed way back then.
Yeah.
And if I had had that way back then, or someone there to understand and listen, more so than anything, just listen, I think I could have done a lot more in sport, to be honest. Not so much in terms of achievements, but in terms of enjoyment, I could have done a lot more, definitely.
I was going to say, was there a part of you wishing you'd met him a couple of years prior?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think everything happens for, I don't know, everything happens in the right time, but I definitely do. I think, see, in sport, when you're going to ask for help, and it probably adds to the stigma, people come to you and they say, right, you need to do this, you need to do, I'm struggling, okay, do this, do this. It's very rare, and it was very rare in my life that I actually met someone who actually sat down and listened, like proper listened, like skillfully, and that, and like that's clinical psychologist, no, Joe. And it was like the power of that, and then the power of someone actually supporting you, a supportive relationship, having that ear to, you know, to share your troubles. And see, to be honest, most of it wasn't even sport related.
Yeah,
like we were talked about things way outside of sport, because that's when I began to realise that if you're happy outside of sport, you're going to do a lot better in sport. And it was almost like people think, right, you need to get better at sport and you'll perform better. For me, it was, if I become a better person outside the ring, I'm most definitely going to become a better boxer inside the ring. And I learned that through Paul, and that was through being a bit more kinder to myself, a bit more softer, you know, a bit more easier on myself.
Yeah, but in fairness, like, how can we expect people to come forward and say, yeah, I need help? Because as you said, you're on an elite team.
Yeah,
it's a team, you can be replaced, like, you will be dropped. So like, it's so competitive, and you're afraid to put your hand up and say, look, I'm actually struggling here.
Yeah,
because you're going to be like, right, well, if you're not doing it, the next fella will.
Yeah.
So how can we expect people to come forward and be like, no, we actually need Aidan Walsh here to perform better, rather than Aidan Walsh to make up the numbers.
Yeah. And that's hard, isn't it? Because elite sports, it's all performance driven, it's all outcome based, and that's a challenge, and that's the part that I don't like about it. And that's why, like, see, the work that, like, I do now, not even only in elite sports but in general, like, I really don't care about performance. I know it's alright for me to say that because it's not me performing, but I genuinely don't care about performance. See, as long as you're happy and you're fulfilled and you're able to go into sport and you're able to enjoy sport, that's a massive success.
Yeah.
And I can say that wholeheartedly because I know it's true. I've seen athletes who have won absolutely everything and they're so unhappy. And you know yourselves, you're people with loads of money or so. It's what you do. I think it's your purpose in life and what's your values. I always go back to that with athletes. What's your values? What do you value in life? I love kindness. I love a bit of softness. Do you know what I mean? I love that sort of, what do you value? What's your values, especially when things get hard? What do you value? What do you stick to? What type of person are you? if you know that, I don't think you can go too far wrong.
Yeah. Mm. You were right with what you were saying though about like the reason why we put kids into sport is because they learn these skills. So you were saying like managing your emotions and tempo, but no one actually sits them down to do it.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, we can teach them discipline. Yeah, like you have to be here at this time and do this. That's discipline.
Yeah.
But like I think that applies to all sports.
Yeah.
But are we teaching them the soft skills? Are we teaching them these interpersonal skills, how to cope in hard situations and what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong? And I'd like to think now we're trying to word over sports and being like, look, no matter what sport you put your kid into, they will learn these skills. Like my daughter's involved in football and you do see the fun side in it. You do see them playing silly games.
Yeah.
But then you see them on the weekends then and they're blowing teams yeah. away. And you're like, yeah. there's obviously something,
yeah.
there's something right here that they're doing. It's not always like, get in, drills.
I think it's when you get to the highest level or when kids are getting to a higher level, it then just becomes, you need to perform.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, you need to win here. You need to, do you know what I mean? Rather than, I think kids just going into boxing clubs, there is a lot to learn. But I think when they get to a certain level, then it's like, you're just expected to win.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Again, you need to say to kids as well, because I think a lot of kids, they try and emulate what they see on the telly.
Yeah.
You need to be like, see who you're seeing on the telly. That's like the top 1%.
Yeah.
Like, there's a good chance no one you ever meet in life will be there. You know what I mean? Let alone you be there. It's a good chance no one you know will ever get to that.
Yeah.
So then you have to have that conversation with them. Like, this is what we're trying to teach you. You're making memories with your friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we're teaching you to be a better person. And I think some parents need that conversation as well, to be honest, because you just see people fucking baiting their kids into places and they're like, the kid's not having fun here. You're not having fun here. So what are we doing? Like, you know what I mean? It's more detrimental.
And I agree. And that's like, I massive on relationships within sport, particularly the coach athlete relationships. But like, if you can build good relationships, and that goes the same for parents and the individual and parents and the coach, if you can build good relationships, a lot of those issues, they can be resolved. Like, if there's communication there, if there's good education there around it, which I think like in Ireland now it's really, really improved on. Like, Sport Ireland have a number of things that they do, which is really, really good. But I think a lot of it all comes down to relationships. If you have relationships within sports, whether it be teams or relationships with parents or kids, relationships allow people to flourish. When the relationship's positive and healthy, people flourish. And that's what I'm massive on that again, but it's one of those areas where like people are like, oh no, you need more. But relationships across the board are massive, and you said it yourself, it's about making memories, it's about creating relationships with people, and those are the things that you remember in sport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We mentioned earlier you are a two-time Olympian, and I think sometimes when we're sitting back watching the Olympics and you're watching these boxers coming out and you see them at the highest level, I don't think the average person ever sits back and wonders what they're going through mentally.
Yeah.
I think we just sit back and we go, oh, let's see how they perform.
Yeah.
Regardless of the performance, they're on the telly, there's millions of people watching and people don't really think that far back or think about what they're thinking mentally.
Yeah.
What were you thinking mentally when you got to the Olympics the first time and you're walking out there first fight?
So for me, I was really, really fortunate enough. One of the psychologists at the time, Kevin McManaman, who played for Dublin GAA, he was our sports psychologist at the time, and he gave me a book just right before the Olympics. It was in the training camp, and I opened the book, and it was about mindfulness and meditation and being present, and I'd never heard any of this before. And I opened the book, and it told a story about a rower who was rowing at the World Championships, or one of the major competitions, and she was on the boat rowing, and she was having thoughts about, I want to get off this boat, I don't want to be here, I just want to give up and stuff. But the book basically told you that's just your mind telling you that. It doesn't actually mean it's true. And for some reason, it really related to me, because all of a sudden I was like, I'm getting them thoughts here at the Olympics. I don't want to be here. I want to go home. I don't want to compete. I'm nervous. I'm afraid I'm going to lose. So all of a sudden I read that book and I was like, these thoughts actually aren't true. Do you know, and I was still young at the time. I was like 20, 21. I was like, so these thoughts aren't true. The ones that I'm having the same thoughts as what this rower, world champion rower, is having. And she still went on to win the gold medal. And straight away I started to go, right, this is actually really interesting. So I started to do a lot of work on mindfulness throughout the Olympics. Like, how do you be present? How do you just let thoughts come? How do you let them go? How do you just stay focused in the present moment? And that was something that really helped me throughout the Olympics. Because I would have been laying in bed at night. It was like, right, before the draw, oh, I'm going to fight Cuba. Right, I'm going to fight Kazakhstan. Oh, I'm going to fight, you know. And then I was like, no, they're just thoughts. They're not true. And that book really helped me. It was unbelievable. And I remember walking out to the ring to fight for the Olympic medal, and I was like, right, how can I just stay present, Aidan? Don't do anything else, just stay present. Smell the gloves, smell the ring, feel the gloves on you, feel your toes, you know, how can I stay present? just let everything else take care of itself. If you stay present, and that was the one thing that I told myself fighting for an Olympic medal, just stay present, Aidan. If you can stay present, don't worry about skills, don't worry about tactics, don't worry about your opponent. If you think of any of that, that's you jumping out of your head and jumping into the future. Stay present, stay present, stay present. Mm-hmm. And that was something that really helped me massively.
Is the Olympic medal the proudest thing you've done in your life?
No.
It's not even close, is it?
No. The proudest things that I've done in my life, no one's even known. 100 million percent. People close to me have known, but 1,000,000%. 1,000,000%.
I'm not going to ask you what the other thing is, but why is it not up there?
When I look back now, the Olympic medal, which is great, and I'm so, so proud of it, and I'm so, so happy that I achieved it. But I like to use the Olympic medal now as a platform to help other people. That's what I like to put it on a pedestal for. It's like, right, it's given me the platform to help other people. But the proudest moments and the moments that I struggled behind the scenes when not many people knew, those were the times when it was challenging. There was no one, there was a select few people there to support you. Do you know, it was challenging, it was difficult. No one, like, the Olympic medal, like, when you're at that level, everybody wants to help you. Everybody wants to support you. Everybody wants to back you. And it's almost like, it's not easy, but it's not challenging the way you're struggling in the background. Not many people know. And for me, like I always say, my hardest battles, my toughest battles were done in the background. And like there's a select few people in my life that really, really helped me. And they know what it was like. Like for example, even qualifying for my second Olympics, like that was a period that was so, so hard and it was so, so difficult. And to be honest, I'm still recovering from it, to be quite honest. Like I went to Thailand and had 6 fights in 8 days, and then I'd have fought world champion, fought Cuba, fought odd number amount of countries. And even then I phoned Michaela after my first fight and says, Michaela, I can't do it. I had 5 more fights to go. I said, Michaela, I can't do this. I was struggling even then. And even throughout that whole tournament, like I would have been on the phone to the psychologist and stuff and saying I'm going to come home and I don't want to do it anymore. And this was on a daily basis. And the day that I went to qualify for the Olympics, I lost against a guy from Jordan. And I got out of the ring and I had no energy at all. Prior to this competition, I'd retired for a year. So I had been out of the ring for like a year. And after I got out of the ring, I lay down. I had nothing left in me. Like, I mean, absolutely nothing. I was shot. I was done. And I was saying to the coach, I can't go on. But I had another fight. I had 2 more fights if I still wanted to qualify. Because it went off into like a box off.
Mm.
So that was my 4th fight. 2 more fights to go. And I was to fight Cuba next. And I said to the coaches, no way. I can't. There's no way I can fight Cuba. There's no way. And Cuba's one of the best countries in the world. I was like, I just don't, it's not even about the opponent, but I had no energy. I literally had nothing left. So I went out that night, so I did by myself, went to a steak restaurant, got a big large steak, chip, barbecue sauce, 2 cans of Coke. And I was due to fight the Cuban the next day. And I was like, I'm not fighting. So I was going out and enjoy myself. Big steak, big massive steak, happy days and stuff. Told home, wasn't fighting, told everybody, wasn't fighting. So I got up the next morning and there was a knock on the door and I opened it. It was the coach, Damien Kennedy. And he had the laptop up and he says, Ian, come on. I says, just give me 5 minutes. I said, Dean, I'm not, I can't do it. I want to go home. I can't do it. I've given everything. I tried to come back. I'm happy with myself. And he says, Ian, watch this video. He says, trust me, 5 minutes, watch this video. I guarantee you can beat this guy, Ian. Come on, please. And he sat down, he opened the video and he showed me the Cuban and stuff. And he was saying, Ian, come on, you can do it. You can do it and stuff. And when he went to walk out of the room, he turned around and stuff. He was talking to me and he said, Ian, come on now. You have a think about it. And I said, no problem. And I went on later that day and went and beat the Cuban. And then went on the next day and then beat the Puerto Rican and qualified. And after that competition, I only knew this a few weeks ago. Damien says when he left my room, he says when he turned around to say, right, Aidan, come on, he looked over and he seen 2 cans of Coke. And he left the room and he says, ah, we've lost him.
Yeah.
And I says, you're lucky that's all you saw, because there was about 4 or 5 more under the bed. But even looking back then, like, so there was times like that, it was like really difficult, like really, really hard. And like you're in a room on your own. You know, it's hard, you don't know, like, those are the moments. There's so many of those moments that I talk about that actually mean a lot more to me than the Olympic medal.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, obviously, you retired young and Michaela is still boxing.
Yeah.
Is there ever a part of you looking at her saying, I'd love her to retire, or do you think she copes well, or what's the reason that you did retire?
Yeah, do you know what, and that's a great question. I look at Michaela and obviously she wants the Olympic medal, like most athletes, you want that Olympic medal, and she's so close to it as well. So for me, it's like I'm in a position now that I can do my best to help in any way that can actually just help her get across the line. But at the same time, sport's hard, and I'm like, you've been to the Olympics, you've been to the World Championships, you've done, you know, like there comes a time when you have to step away and you have to move into something else. But she loves it. She loves going away. The girls and on the Irish boxing team have a great team. They have a good support network. They get on really well and they really love it. So I think as long as you love it and as long as you have a passion for something and you want to pursue it, I think that makes a difference.
Yeah.
But if she ever got to the point where it's like, I'm not enjoying it, I'm only doing it for the money, or I'm only doing it for X, Y, or Z, then I would be saying, right, it's time to get out of it, because I stayed in it maybe 2 or 3 years longer than I really should have, to be honest, and I was doing it for that. No, you're on the funding, or you know, it's an easy lifestyle, you're going to train and you don't have to work, and you know, you could be working in an office. Or so looking back, sometimes it takes courage just to say, you know what, enough's enough. Yeah, I'm going to step into what's next.
And what is it with sport? Because sport has grown so much exponentially over the last, say, 50 years. There's not much at the top that they do differently. Yeah. Like, all the top athletes, they all train the same, they all eat the same, yeah, they all sleep the same, they're all measuring the same things.
Yeah.
But it's just mentality.
Yeah.
There's certain different exercises that they do mentally.
Yeah.
So what is it that's separating them at the top?
I think confidence is a massive one, which is important, because if you have the belief that you can actually do so, it's not the be all and end all, but if you have the belief, or you can turn on the belief in a short period of time when you're going to compete, I think you can definitely get a bit more out of yourself and you can last a bit longer. Like say for instance in a fight, if you're going into a fight with a bit of extra belief saying I can actually do this, surely it's going to help you, do you know. But one of the biggest things that I've seen, like self-talk, I know it sounds so cliche and so simple, but self-talk is a massive thing, particularly when you're going into fight in a high-pressure environment. Like if you look at your self-talk, like if it's negative and it's down, you know, it's hard to get the best performance out of yourself. Where like if you have good body language and good self-talk, and I say this openly, it's no secret, like in any sport, in sports psychology, it's massive. But if you have good self-talk and good body language, you can do amazing things. You know yourself, when you go up in the morning, you put your shoulders back, you look ahead, you feel ready. But if you turn your shoulders and you're looking down, you know, when you're crunched over, there's a very, very big difference in how you're going to perform. So I definitely agree. I think mindset's massive. But I think the mistake that a lot of people make is they get 2 or 3 days before a competition and open up a sports psychology book or a mindset book and go, oh, I'm going to do this, when the best athletes in the world have been doing it 5, 6, 7 months, mm-hmm, year, 2 years before. And I think that's the difference. I really think that's the difference.
What's one simple exercise you'd give somebody then to increase their confidence?
So I do an exercise that it's basically 3 words. So I use this all the time through my whole career. And it was 2 words in an image, but 3 words. And mine was cocky, confident Ronaldo. And I was never cocky. I was never confident. And I was nowhere near Ronaldo. You know, I wish I was. But for me, that got me in the best mindset to perform. And no matter what, see, when I was going to perform, it was like cocky, confident Ronaldo, cocky, confident Ronaldo. No matter what happens in this fight, I'm going to be cocky, confident Ronaldo. And I love that. Even going out to warm up, before I was warming up, if I had doubts, if I was a wee bit anxious, a wee bit afraid, cocky, confident Ronaldo. And even seeing that photo of Ronaldo, it sort of made you, you know, put the shoulders back, good body language, clean shaven, you know, you're focused, you're ready to go. And I say this, I love those 3 words. So I get quite a lot of athletes that I would do wee small bits and pieces, pick 3 words, but one with a photo. You know, and you know when you're going out to compete, cocky, confident Ronaldo. No matter what I'm going to do today, I'm going to be cocky, confident Ronaldo. No matter what happens, if I'm 2 up, if I'm 3 up, 4 up, 4 down, I'm going to be cocky, confident Ronaldo. I'm going to be on my toe. You know, there's all different ones, but I love those three. Yeah. I'm actually getting ready to go now.
You can come back.
But I love that, yeah. And I think that's so important. That and body language is a big one for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we see, like, what you said there about having that little blowout, even though it was a steak and 2 cans of Coke.
Yeah.
You'd see, like, particularly if you look at the Irish football team, like, all throughout the Jack Charlton era, it was just like, Jack let them go out on the piss together.
Yeah.
And then they'd go out and perform. You know what I mean? It's like when they let the shackles off, and you see, I think England, when it came to, like, going to the World Cup tournaments or whatever, they were never allowed to have their misses with them.
Yeah.
And then they start letting them, and then they perform better because the shackles were off. Then it's like, the tension has dropped
100%.
Because if you think about it, the hard work's already done.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You're not going to become unfit overnight.
No.
And you're not going to become a much better boxer overnight either.
No.
So the hard work is essentially done.
100%. And I think, again, but how do you prepare for those moments? So, and this is where I love to get into. So it's like you do all the training and you do absolutely everything, but the pressure's like way down here. And then you go to a competition and the pressure goes up and all of a sudden you start to think you need to be doing all this madness. Mm. You just need, if you bring the pressure down and you do what you've been doing for the last 8, 9, 10 weeks, you can get across the line. But when the pressure hits, you start thinking, I need to do more, I need to do something different. You start changing what you're eating, what you dress like, you know. Pressure does funny things.
Yeah.
So I think I'm always big on, how can you get that in training? How can you replicate that pressure? Yeah. So that you're consistently working under that pressure. So when it comes to that pressure time, it's like, we've done this under that amount of pressure. We know what to do, we know what not to do. And just stay consistent.
Yeah. Tell us what the Olympics is actually like. Maybe not Tokyo, because that was COVID.
Yeah.
And I'd say a lot of it was kind of dampened, was it?
Do you know what? Once we get into the village in COVID, or in Tokyo during COVID, it was actually sound in the village because everybody was tested every day. Like every morning you were tested and they could be really strict. But like you had the masks off and stuff and it was all dead on. Paris was good as well. Like Paris was like, it was a lot more, they had a bit more freedom and stuff. But yeah, do you know what? It's class. And see, to be honest, you don't, like when you win medals in the village, like even after you've won your medal and you're walking about, it doesn't mean nothing because you're walking down, he's got an Olympic medal and he's got an Olympic gold medal and it's almost just like everybody has them. So there's a wee bit of a period when you win your medal, it's like, is this actually as big as what people? And then you go home and it's like, you know, and that's madness. But the Olympic Village itself is good. Everything's free, you know. Everybody always jokes because there's like Costa, like free Costa stores and you get free coffee and you get free Coke and all this type of stuff, free food. And everybody always slags and thinks, Jesus, when I go home, I'm going to walk into Costa and order coffee and walk out and forget to pay, you know, because you go 2, 3, 4 weeks without paying for anything. You just swipe your wee card. You're going, Jesus, this is handy. And you actually forget what it feels like to buy stuff. You're going, Jesus, coming out of the Olympics, we were all going, I actually can't wait to buy something in the shop. But yeah, it's class. And getting to see, like, we were just walking one day and like Simone Biles just walked past and, you know, like different athletes. We were standing in the canteen one day and Nadal just literally came and stood in front of us. Him and the other guy he plays with. But yeah, it's class. It really is class. And the whole atmosphere and the buzz and it's good. But I think a lot of athletes sometimes can get there and then, you know, go like, oh, I'm at the Olympics, and then all of a sudden they're down at the games room and they're down doing different things and reading for, where you have to make sure when you go there
you're on it.
There's time to enjoy it after, but here I'm here to do something and to do well and to make history as well. But so it's find that balance.
Is everybody up to it? Because they're like in game out, it's all tense to there to do a job.
Yeah, some people would and then some people just do the opposite.
Yeah,
some people just be like, wow, do you know, and then just
let loose.
Yeah. Like just run about and they're down at games room and they're down getting this and they're getting the stickers and they're swapping the pins and before they know they're fighting tomorrow and then they're all freaking fighting and then put out first round. It's like, and then you're there for another week going, jeez, I wish I had to just give myself a few days, but it's hard. But you see, like, when you see the top athletes, like one of the days in Tokyo, I was down under, we usually like train like in car parks and things like that when you're away, and I was walking past, I got lost, and like I just seen Djokovic on the bike one day just sitting by himself doing a session. Like, that's class, you know, like, you know, when you actually see it and you go,
yeah,
that's why he's, you know, he was proper pushing himself. And I was like, you think those top athletes are just given things, when you actually go, or he's in a basement in the Olympics a few days before, pushing himself on it. Do you know, things like that, it's like you get a real insight into how elite athletes live and breathe. And then from the other side of that too, you realise, Jesus, they're just the same as everybody else.
Yeah.
There's no difference. Do you know, you think you're like, what? And then you see them and you go, it's mad. Like, do you know, so it's good from both sides.
Do you ever think about approaching any of them?
Yeah, like we got photos with Nadal and stuff and all the few different ones. And yeah, we actually, in those Olympics, Simone Biles, she had been out obviously for a long time with mental health and stuff, so she wasn't doing photos and things like that, so people were asking, and she had like friends are saying no, she's not doing any photos, which is understandable,
because
she was massive. And yeah, a few different ones, like she and Laurie, he actually came into the village for Ireland one of the nights and got photos and stuff. And then a lot, like LeBron James was in the village and stuff as well, so you're seeing all these different characters and stuff, and it's like, jeez, it's class.
It's mad to think, isn't it, because like they're like world famous superstars, they probably couldn't go anywhere else, but then like you have just as much right to be there as they do.
100%, yeah.
It's mad when you think about it that way, like, isn't it?
100%. And like even you're so right, like even standing in the queue, Nadal was like ruffling, like he's standing there and he was queuing up like everybody else. Do you know, there was no like getting to the front or just queuing up like everybody else.
There's nowhere else in the world he'd have to queue.
100%.
other than
here. Like, yeah.
It's
and then,
crazy.
And then even when you do ask him for photos, like a lot of them just be like, yeah, of course. No, I love that. because there's nothing worse when you meet somebody and they're a bit sort of arrogant, they're rude, and you're like, do you know what, I'm raging, I asked him for a photo. But most of them are sound like,
yeah, it could be a respect thing as well, because he's now like, look, this fella, he's an Olympian, he's obviously, I don't know what he does, but he's here for a reason, so you jump in. Whereas if that was in an airport or something, he'd be like,
you're 100%. It's class.
Aidan, do you have any regrets about retiring so young?
No, definitely not. I think I regret not doing it sooner, to be honest.
You said that to me earlier on before we started recording, and I just said to you, save that, because I think that that's mad, because you've retired really young. And you're saying you wish you had retired sooner.
I just think sport's hard. Like, it's sport, elite sport at a high level's hard, and I praise anybody that can do it like for a long period of time on a consistent basis, and anybody, like, even throughout history, anybody who can compete over several Olympic cycles, like, they've got something inside them which is incredible. I just got to the point where it was like, I had my Olympic medal, I'd retired, I came back, I won the Commonwealth gold, and that was a real big achievement for me. And then I qualified for my second Olympics, and I was like, do you know what, I got the Olympic medal. It was something I always dreamed of, something I always wanted. I suffered so much, I struggled so much, I learned so much, and I just felt that it was the right time. Well, I felt that it was too late, but I just felt that I have to make a decision. And I always say this, Dr. Paul Gaffney, the psychologist I work with, he said a quote to me is, and he says, are you choosing unhappiness over uncertainty? And when you think about it, it was true. And it took me a while to sort of go, what does that mean? I was choosing unhappiness over the uncertainty of what was actually going to happen in my life if I stepped away. And it was only then I realised, I'm afraid of that uncertainty. I don't want to step away because I don't know what job I'm going to go into. I don't know what role I'm going to go into. I don't know where I'm going to get money. I don't know what I'm going to do. So all that uncertainty was stopping me from making the decision. So I was choosing unhappiness over uncertainty. You know, and that was a real eye-opener for me. And see, when I took the courage to actually say, no, I'm going to step away, that's, like, I've had the best days of my life since stepping away. Like, I've enjoyed life. I do very little boxing. I do no boxing training. I do a wee bit of coaching. I do things to enjoy. Like, I come to Dublin. Like, when I had boxed in Dublin and I associated Dublin with work, I didn't like coming to Dublin, hated Dublin. Do you know, because it was reminding me of all the bad times, all the negative times, hotel rooms. Do you know what you associated with work? When I, like, drive to Dublin and you're appreciated, and you appreciate the people you're with, you appreciate your surroundings, you appreciate your achievements. It was a real eye-opener for me to do it. And again, it goes back to the word vulnerability. Like, having the courage to be vulnerable and actually say, I'm struggling and I actually don't want to do this anymore. I think that in itself takes so much strength. And we can talk about getting into the ring with Cubans or Russians. I can guarantee you and I firsthand, to put your hand up and say, I'm struggling, is one of the most courageous things I've ever done. And I've fought all across the world against all different opponents, and I can tell you that now firsthand. Because there's so many, especially men, like, there's so many men struggling. And again, especially men in boxing and combat sports and elite sports, we're taught to toughen up and not to show emotion and to be stoic and bravado. And it's almost, there's a stigma around seeking help for men. And I think that, for me, is something that I want to change going forward, particularly within combat sports and boxing, because there's so many men struggling out there. And if you can just ask for a bit of help, if you're going through something, it can change your life. It really can change your life. And there's people out there to do it. And again, Sport Ireland, Sport NI, there's good people there, particularly for the boxers, who can actually say, we can support you. You know, we have the resources, we have the right people in place to help you. And I think that's the why I'm so dedicated and motivated to go down that direction.
It's mad, because, like, you think you're a top performing athlete, but you're under that much pressure. You think physically you're in the peak shape you'll ever be in, but, like, all that pressure, what it's doing to your head, can actually affect you physically, then your body can start to fucking break down.
100%. Like, the time I went home from that tournament in Bulgaria, I'd won two fights, and I went to the coach at the time, and I just literally broke down. I'd actually asked to meet him in the reception, and I was sitting waiting on him, and he says, the words he said to me, and he says, when I came over and you were sitting down, he said, you were like a crackhead sitting on the chair, face all sunk in, had a black eye, had a bit of a cut, I was all hunched over, I was thick thin because of the stress and the pressure and anxiety. He says, you were exactly like someone that was on heroin or crack cocaine. Like, he said genuinely. And that's how low sport brought me, just because of the pressure, just because of the stress. Again, I was doing things because I always liked to sort of, like, you know, you were thin because you weren't eating as much, and you were, you know, you thought, like, at the time, oh, I'm in good shape, but you weren't eating because of all this and the stress and anxiety. But there was many times in my career, like, I've been in the best shape of my life, like, say, for instance, physically, like, six-pack and ripped, and I'm going to myself, I actually feel the absolute worst I've ever felt in my life. People be like, you know, I feel great when I'm slimmed down, and, you know, boxers would say to you, I feel the best when I'm ripped, and, you know, when you have a thin face and you're lean. Most of my career, I was like that. I was so unhappy. you know, I'm far more happier now. Like, I don't train, I do very little, do a bit of running and stuff, but I'm far more happier now that you're able to go and eat whatever you want, you're able to do what you want, you're not worried about, you know, what I look like. Of course, I'm cautious of not putting too much weight on, but I'm a lot more happier. I'm a lot more fulfilled.
And thinking about having to be honest with
my 100%. And having to go and get weighed in the mornings and having to go and the fights and you're weighing in every day. And, you know, I love drinking Coke. Like, and towards the end of my career, I was drinking Coke every day, even before fights and stuff, because I needed that enjoyment from it.
Yeah.
But just being able to do those things, those are the simple things you should be able to enjoy in life.
That's what I was going to say. And that might sound very minor to somebody listening to this who doesn't understand like the highest level.
Yeah.
But like, that is like seen as like one of the worst things you can do is go drinking Coke.
100%.
And you were saying then you're just going milling Coke
100%.
Out. 100%. Coca-Cola.
And do you know what one of the psychologists told me this as well? It was a time whenever I used to be like, because again, like, you know what, OCD, it's like, do you know what, I know it, like, so I'm fixated on certain things. And a psychologist said to me one time, worrying, does it say anywhere in history that if you have a bottle of Coke or a can of Coke the day of your fight that you can't win? And I was like, nowhere. And he'd be like, if it makes you happy, if it makes you fulfilled, if it makes you perform the way you're performing, you've done it before and you've performed really well, why would you stop? I was like, that's so true. So I straight away cans of Coke, you know. So, and that's why I get it. Like, there's certain things you have to be disciplined on.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't go around like doing certain things like, you know, that's going to really jeopardize your performance. But if you have things and you know your body, you know what works for you, then you should be able to enjoy it. Do you know, and that's my perspective on it. Like,
And the release that gives you then will actually help you perform.
100%.
Yeah. Aidan, what is the role that you're transitioning to now since you retired?
Yeah, so I do athlete support with the boxing team in Boxing Ireland. Yeah, so it's more like a support role in terms of like Sport Ireland provide the boxing team with a number of support services like physio and nutritionists and psychologists and all these things. So my role is just sort of in the background as like a bridge, or like a get, like, how do you bridge those support services? How do you help athletes through transitions? Do you know, basically, like, if you define welfare for athletes, it's about how can you help an athlete have a joyful experience in their time within that environment. And I think that's my role. How can I help athletes, whether that be a chat in the gym or a coffee, or, you know, helping them with, say, a college assignment, or helping them get a job or goal set. You know, it's a range of things, but it's like, how can I help an individual who steps foot in Boxing Ireland to have a positive experience? Because when you leave Boxing Ireland, which it's going to come to everybody, like it comes to us all, I would love somebody to say, I actually had enjoyed my time there. I left with, say, some type of education. I left with some type of knowledge on how to manage myself outside of sport. Like, my identity is a lot stronger. You know, I know who I am away from sport. All those things, I would love to try and help young people who go into the sport. And I think that's massive. And I think, again, when we talk about expectations, all those things are just expected of you. Do you know, to go in and you're just expected to transition into the program, you're just expected to go away, win international tournaments, you're just expected to retire and live happily ever after. But that's not the reality. The reality is it's hard, and be able to bridge those gaps between athletes and service providers and try and get the best out of the athlete, that's the role.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the key to unlocking success going forward with people, because as I said, like, all the facilities are coming up across the board, that what you and the next fella are going to be doing is the exact same.
Yeah.
So it has to be the athlete's welfare, the athlete's mentality.
Yeah.
That's what's going to drive them forward. That's what's going to unlock it. Yeah.
You're really passionate about what you're doing now, aren't you?
100%. I just think it's massive. And I just think, because I've been in the situation myself,
yeah,
I know how important it is. And I know, you know, even going back to listening, that, like, Dr. Paul Gaffney, listening, like, it's very rare a coach, like, actually sits down and listens to you. It's all, you know, it's like dictatorship. You know, a lot of times coaching do this, do, like, so I'm big on, right, how can I actually listen to athletes? What do you want? It's not about me as a coach, or it's not about me as a service provider. It's about you. What do you want? Do you know, so things like that, then I know the power of that, and I know what I can bring, and I know what I can do. And again, we'll go back to saying autonomy. Giving someone autonomy, it's your career. It's you has to live with it. So what do you want to do? I'm here to provide a service of support. But how do you help people? Because when you give people autonomy and ask them, it's what do they want, people just, you know, there's a flourishing in that itself. You know, when you give someone the autonomy, this is your career. I'm here to serve you. And I think a lot of athletes forget that. People are there to serve the athlete. It's not the other way about. The athlete is the number one. Everybody's working for the athlete. Mm. So I think I'm passionate in that, because I know the power that can bring. And I know that giving the athletes back the power that they deserve, it's their career. This is for them. It's not for us. It's not for me. My career's over, done with. It's about you. How can you maximize you? and that's what I really am passionate about.
I think it really helps though with your background and how much you've struggled and you're open with the struggles mentally, that when you're there to support these athletes, they're really going to listen. Like, you know, you're not just reading stuff from a book. You've been there, you've felt the pressure, you've been at the highest level. Your story is powerful. Like, we've sat here for, I don't know how long we're into the episode now, but it's really, really, really powerful to even just sit on this Blading chair. And I'm not an up-and-coming boxer at the Blading highest level, but we're sitting here listening to the stuff that you went through mentally. And that's what we wanted to touch on today, because your boxing career is fantastic, your achievements are fantastic, but what we were intrigued about was how open you are with the struggle at the highest level. And I think that's going to help so many people out there that are listening to this. And maybe as well, even if you're not in an elite sport like that or anything, but to understand what people are actually going through when you're watching them on the telly then as well, that the stuff going on in the background, they're human.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of way.
Did you ever think about doing anything outside of sports? So like from a mindset perspective?
Yeah, so I do a bit of work in the GAA, and then I'm starting a doctorate in DCU as well through my job. So I think I love the, like, again, when you look at it and you're supporting athletes, I want to be the most educated that I can be to make sure that I'm giving people the best opportunity possible. And I think that's only right. I've got a bit of experience, but if you have that academic background, it's so important as well, because it's people's mental health that you're working with. So I think that's important. So I love education. I think it's important, again, because it's about sport and it's something I'm passionate about. As I said, it makes it a lot easier. You know, you're focused on something that, and you're learning about something that you're passionate about. But I love education. See, to be quite honest, like when I stepped away, I said to myself, I wasn't getting involved in sport at all. I was doing my master's in sport and exercise psychology, but I said to myself, do you know what? I'm done with sport. I would love to sort of help, like, within the mental health area, within the general population.
Yeah.
And even when I did step away at first, I actually started to do a bit of work in the gym, just a local gym, and I wasn't that sport related. It was more general health, because I really wanted to help. I wanted to get away from elite sports and work with the general public, because there's a lot of people struggling out there, do you know, and there's a lot of people who are suffering, and like, you need to be able to help. And I think, and it would be wrong of me just to dedicate myself to elite sports, where it's like, how can you help people on a general basis, do you know, that aren't having those service providers, who don't get the opportunity to speak to people? How can you get into gyms and actually talk to people, whether it be young or old? Sometimes older people in gyms, and I've noticed, it's like, you know, their spouse has died, or, you know, and they're lonely, and sometimes people just love someone to talk to. And I think that's a powerful thing. So I would love to do more of that. I know I'm a bit busy now, but I would love to do more of that away from sport, try and help and try and use the skills away from sport to help people within the general population, because there's so many people struggling out there. That's why you see so much drinking, drugs and alcohol.
And in a way, that'll go full circle then, because that's everything that you've learned in boxing that we're supposed to teach kids to apply to everyday life. You are then taking your teachings from boxing and applying it to everyday life.
That's exactly, you're 100%.
Yeah. But you're applying it in a more practical way. Like, this is how it should have been taught and this is how you apply it.
So yeah.
Perfectly, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to talk about here before we wrap it up, Ed? Anything you want to plug?
No, do you know what? I just think for any young individual out there, I think it's so important to ask for help if you're struggling. And I get it, like, we all come from different backgrounds. A lot of people don't, like, might not need the help. I wish, going back to that 12-year-old me, that I had the courage to speak out and ask for some type of help, or someone had noticed certain things back then. So I think if you're a young person, to speak is strength. I always say that. It's massive. And going back to the strongest people that I know didn't look strong, didn't come across strong. And in fact, they were actually soft, compassionate and warm. And those were the best people that I've met in life. Because I don't think we need to be bravado, or we don't need to be out there. You know, I think kindness and compassion, like, you know, like, I think that can be the way forward. And you can do that in elite sports. You don't need to be macho, or you don't need to be bulked up. And, you know, I think kindness is the way forward. And that goes for elite sports as well. We don't need to be, like, outdoing each other. We don't need to be, you know, it's not win at all costs. If you can be kind, if you can be compassionate, if you can be caring, I think those are the real qualities of high performance athletes.
Aiden, you're a fucking legend.
Oh, thank you.
We always talk about the soundest people that were ever on the podcast, Aiden. I think you're in the top three. Fuck Ryan Hennessy, he's had to get the mouth.
Oh, thank you.
Nah, Aiden, you're a legend, honestly. That was a brilliant conversation.
When is the book coming out?
So we're actually finished it. So the draft is just getting added at the minute, so it's the next few weeks.
Lovely.
It's a small one now, so we started just after Paris. So it's a small book, I think 80-90 pages, and Paul just writes a bit, and then I reflect on it, and then it's just different chapters.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, that'd be good.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Keep an eye out for that one.
I'll be class.
All right, yeah. And else, that's it.
That's it.
All right, take us out, Siobhan.
Boom.
That's us for this week, and thanks to the legends at Roy Style Furniture for supporting the podcast.
Speaking of great support, see what I did there? Roy Style has everything, and I mean everything. Sofa sorted, beds covered, dining table, six chairs, boom. All in one house package. Plus the lads in the store are sound. They're not pushy, just helpful. And if you're an online shopper, no problem.
Visit www.roystyle.ie, and when you shop in store, tell them that the two boys from the podcast sent you, and they'll throw you in a little discount.
Don't sleep on this deal, unless it's on one of their mattresses, in which case, fair play.
So get down and get the gaff sorted. Roy Price, Roy Style, right now.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app. What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Till your body is dead. Work it hard and low. When you finish that. The hip knocker. Long, cut down.